Today on Chesapeake Shores, we talk about birthdays, the band, and brotherhood. And we have special guest Kirsten Hansen joining us. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, hello, Chessies. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. We're here doing Chesapeake Shores, Season 2, Episode 9, The Royal Court. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Joining me, I have, as always...
Hello, as always, Chessies. It's Stefan Lovegrove. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Dr. Lovegrove.
Dr. Lovegrove, another great episode. And we have a special guest joining us today. It'll be really fun. We have writer Kirsten Hansen joining us.
Yes, so excited to talk to her.
It'll be great. We're going to pick her brain. She's going to tell us a little bit about Chesapeake Shores, maybe some behind-the-scenes stuff. It's going to be a real fun time. So, really quick, I know you wanted to talk about, like, quick thoughts, but what were your quick thoughts?
Well, my quick thoughts were this was a fantastic episode. I don't know what you guys thought. Please let us know in the chat and the comments. I've already watched it multiple times. I thought it was, just from start to finish, I thought it was really this show at its best, and I love the episode. I'm so excited to talk about it.
I'm so excited, and I'm so excited to introduce our special guest of the day. We have writer Kirsten Hansen joining us. Hello, Kirsten.
Hi.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. So,
how is the weather?
I wish I could see your faces, but it's really good to be here.
Well, we can see your lovely face, and that's all that matters.
What? How is the weather in Vancouver right now?
It's really nice. It's like a bright blue sky. There's no clouds. It's sunny. It doesn't look like fall at all. So,
that's it. Marissa, next week we need to do a live remote from the shores.
Oh, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm actually going to Vancouver in a month, so I'll be there very soon, actually. So
perfect for fall.
It's a beautiful place. So we're really excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. But you guys should do like a live taping or something while we're doing the show next year. I don't know. Well, if we get picked up. But,
if.
We have our fingers crossed.
Yes.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Still very crossed. We still don't have the official announcement for season 3, but everyone is hoping. I mean, come on. The ratings are great. We have to have a season 3.
I know. Everyone seems so excited. We keep hearing really good things from the network about the ratings, and the fans on Twitter and Facebook are, you know, they love it, and everybody just really wants season 3. Same with the cast and the crew, and I mean, we just are a family, so we're like, when can we go back?
Right. And I know you're working super hard, and especially during this whole season, and you were writing while you were also filming. What has the process been like for you from start to finish? And you're near the end, but what has that journey been for you so far?
It was a whirlwind. I mean, it really, we would blink and it would be like a month had gone by. It was, I mean, there were days when it was Michael and I in his office, and it was like, you know, 17-hour days, and we just have people bringing us food and another Starbucks run because it's like, okay, we can do this, power down, we'll get it done. It was pretty intense, but it was like the best experience because everybody really like pulled together, and it's so collaborative, and we're like a family, and, you know, Matt Drake and Dan Paulson and Nancy Silvers and other producers on the show, we all kind of banded together, and because we had a lot of, you know, it's TV, right? Everything moves really fast. There's lots of changes, and we're not just shooting one episode, we're shooting two at a time, and then we're also prepping two and then writing the next two. So it's just like a constant moving machine, and we'll be like, oh, we need to rewrite that scene that's happening today because of this. Oh, right. Oh, no. And then we're, you know, scrambling. And so it's you know, it's fast. It's very fast TV. It's fun.
Kirsten, we want you to know everyone in the live chat is so excited to have you here. Lots of love and welcome from all the Chessies today. And I'm wondering, because we've heard this now both from Michael and you, that there was a lot of constant rewriting. I'm wondering, how much did where we end up storyline-wise at the end of season 2 change from where you thought it was going to at the beginning?
Well, it's so funny. We met up in January, Michael, Nancy, and I, and Dan, and Matt, we were talking, we're all sort of plotting out, okay, what's season two gonna look like? And then we had this, immediately we're all just like, all these ideas, we're so excited, and Michael was just like, came in like guns ablaze, and he has like this sheet of paper, and he like everything mapped out, and we had already, like, and Nancy too, because she had been on season one with me, and she wrote the pilot, so she knew the series. It was like in her bones, and she's like, okay, well, this is where the characters are going, and this is what's going to happen. We're like, yes, yes, okay. And so we were locked in a, not locked in, but like in a writing room for a month, and we were kind of putting it all together, and we were talking with the execs at Hallmark, and everything was really working, and we were really happy with it. But then something just sort of shifted, and this is what happens. It's like, one little thing changes, and then it's like everything kind of unravels after that. And it was something, there was some storylines that we had to adjust just because it was like, okay, wait, this isn't totally right. Or maybe this is, you know, because once you start going down that road, you start to go, oh, wait, actually, because it's one thing to map it out and plan it. But once you actually get into the heart of writing it and you flesh it into scripts and you flesh it into how many scenes in an episode, it changes, right? Things evolve. And then you start... That's the writing process. Things change naturally, and we talk to the cast, we talk to the other producers, the networks, and it just evolved. And so it is sort of the same as what we had initially mapped out, but like the through line big arcs are very much the same, but like sort of how the characters get there, there were some twists and turns along the way that we didn't anticipate. And I think actually in hindsight made it a lot better, because how can you know everything just in one, you know, like short little time of mapping it out? It's like over time of like living with these characters and these stories and seeing these scenes. I mean, sometimes you're on set and you're watching the actors together and you're like, ooh, they're so good together. We should do more scenes with them. Or, you know, did you see how they interacted? And like, we need more of that or more of this. And so it evolves. It just... You know, which is kind of nice about TV, because you have time to like, not a lot, but you have time to kind of like, oh, next episode, let's do this. Let's throw in a new scene about this. And right. You can, you know, if you write fast, you can change things on the fly. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know in season one that you were very involved in the script supervisor. And for those who don't know what a script supervisor is. Oh, no.
I am. I used to script supervise. Yes,
okay.
Which is an on-set job. But actually, season one, I did the same job. Well, very similar job to what I did in season two, which is I was a writer and I was working with the showrunner, and it was basically himself and myself, and then Nancy Silvers again. So it was like sort of a trio. In season one, is trio in season two, and so it was the same thing. But I also do the role of script coordinator, which is different than script supervisor, but very easily confused, because it's like they sound like the same thing.
Yes, they do. So there you go. Script coordinator, which is very, very, you know, important and vital to making sure that the storylines are all consistent and they all run smoothly. So working on season one to now season two, is there like a more natural workflow, because this is like the second time around? Did it come easier, or were there new challenges that you had to face?
Well, it's in some ways it was a lot smoother, because the cast is now like a tight-knit family, right? And the crew, we had a lot of the same like heads of department and main and crew were the same as season one, so that was awesome, because you like everyone shows up, you're like, ah, friend. And so we all knew how to work well together. You know, there's a few new people, but everybody sort of blended in. So in that way, I would say it moved a lot smoother than season one, just because season one, you're kind of figuring out what is this location? What, you know, how are we going to do that? Where we figured out some of those logistics. We had a lot of our, you know, our main sets. In fact, a few things, this is a behind the scenes tidbit, like places like Capital Management. In season one, we were shooting it on a location in Nanaimo, and it just wasn't like conducive. It wasn't easy for us. So we decided, why don't we build that? So season two, we actually built it. It's a set. So it's not a real building. I mean, it is a real building, but we built the office space within it. So things like that we learned in season one, okay, how can we make it easier for us in shooting season two. But season two became like a much, I feel like a much bigger show. Like we all of a sudden we're in Nashville and like, but we're still shooting it on Vancouver Island. So we had to really learn how to think outside the box, and we were able to give, like we have a huge cast and we try to give everyone storylines, right? So in some ways it was way more challenging because there's a lot of story to fill in a short amount of time.
Yeah, well, in many ways, it got bigger this year. The show is massive. The stories, I think, are just overall so much going on. You know, we were talking to Michael about it. So much to keep up with from week to week of all these romances and all these projects. And what has been your favorite character or characters to write for in season two?
It's hard.
Are you allowed to have favorites as a writer? I don't know.
Well, it's hard because, okay, I mean, like, the obvious one is Bree, because Bree. I've said this before. She and I are, like, I say Bree O'Brien is my spirit animal. That's right. My hashtag. Because she's the middle daughter, and she's a writer, and she's blonde, and she does yoga. And you know, she has had relationship issues, and I kind of relate to all of those things, the middle daughter and of three girls and writer and yoga and all those things. So in some ways, it's like... It's so easy for me and fun to write her, and I feel like personality-wise, there's like some similarities. So Bree is an obvious one, but I really have had a lot of fun writing Jess this year. And the two of them together is like, you know, it's gold. But then I also kind of relate to Abby because like I'm a workaholic and I get that and I loved writing all the like Nashville stuff and Trace and then. Okay. I mean, everyone. I mean, it's like the Nell and Barbara wisdom, like that's kind of like, you know, they have so much heart and it's, you know, the show wouldn't be the same without them. And I think the hardest one for me to write would be like Mick, because I'm not a father and Michael's just like dives right in and he just gets him. And like to give him that authentic voice that Treat does so well, that's the most challenging for me. But I love like writing all the characters, you know, they're so three-dimensional, you know, they all feel like real people.
Yeah, so. we definitely love it. And I think you and I both agree that we relate to Bree the most, me personally, mm-hmm. and as well as you. So, I mean, season one, you kind of wrote and you helped write these characters like more individually. And I feel in season two, we are mm-hmm. now seeing them like paired up with like a romance. How has that duo dynamic being like writing for two people now compared to one? Has that changed anything?
Well, it's sort of, it's interesting because it's like our core characters are the O'Briens and that's whoever, and Trace, like that's who I mean. And so that's who we're responsible for giving them like real story every week. But then, you know, we meet these new characters and like all of the siblings now have a love interest and they're all so interesting. And so you want to learn more about them. And so it's this real sort of balancing act of like how much time can we spend trying to get to know David Peck or like Simon Atwater and even Danielle, who is so good. Britt Irvin, she doesn't even, we don't get to see enough of her, you know, like, and Sarah, she's a new character. We love Jessica. So it's like, there's all of them are so interesting. And then we have Uncle Thomas and the world is just growing and growing and growing. And, you know, I really wish every episode was 2 hours because it is challenging. But then if you have two of them in a scene together, you get a little bit of time and we have a whole season to sort of build the storylines, you know?
Right.
This might be a weird question. I'm not asking this in a spoiler sense, but where should we be in terms of what we're feeling about Trace and Abby at this point in the season?
Well, I mean, they have a lot of history, Trace and Abby. Like, they were first love when they were, like, 15, 16, 17. You know, they really loved each other, and then it didn't work out because they were in different places in their lives and they went and lived their lives. And so now both of them being back in Chesapeake Shores, it's like, I think there's a part of them that just like, it's like they're magnets. It's like, they're just, there is a part of them that just feels like they're so safe and close together. Like there's just a real love there. You know, I feel that, and I know that for them, but I also see that they have like very different lives. So I think the fans probably are in the same place like that we were when we were writing it, going, where is this going, and where can it go, and does it have a chance? And like they love each other, and we love that camping episode with the two of them. And we actually, because there was so much going on for his own career and her mm-hmm. career and her family stuff, that we didn't feel like we had enough time to really connect them, which was part of the challenge and also makes for good drama because you're pulling them apart and, you know, bringing them back together. But that camping episode really allowed for us to be reminded of why we love Trace and Abby together. Like, he's the guy that brings her, like, Abby is like, you know, mm-hmm. focused, work, got to get this done, got to get that done. She's a multitasking queen and she can do everything. But it's like she's not that kind of person that you don't often see Abby, like, running and having fun, right? Like, and doing these kinds of playful things because she just doesn't have time for that kind of life. And Trace is the person that, like, helps her go fishing and reminds her to sort of be present and enjoy life and do things. And so it was really nice to be able to see that. And I think no matter what happens, Chessie's good, bad, up and down, you know, they there's love there with them. I don't know what else to say at this point.
Right. It's, no, we completely agree. Because the chemistry is obviously there, the love is there, and it's a believable, authentic type of relationship. I think mm-hmm. right now it's just unfortunate that like their lives are so busy heading into two different, completely different careers that it, I don't want to say crashing, but it's just, it's naturally putting a distance between them. And I think what makes for a good, just like a romance that you're watching for a long show, if we want to keep the longevity going, is that it's a relationship you want to keep rooting for. And I think it's still too early in the series in and of itself for them to be together, if we know they're going to be together at the end.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you watch any TV series. I mean, Ross and Rachel.
Exactly. They went 10 seasons for them.
I know, right? And there's like, they get close and then they pull apart and something, you know, but that also makes it good for the viewer because your heart is tugging. You're like, oh, no, I want them together. And I mean, trust me, everybody who works on the show loves, like, wants to see a happy ending for our characters. You know, nobody wants to do anything that's going to, like, make anyone, you know, traumatized. That's not Hallmark, and that's not what we're out to do on Chesapeake Shores. So, but you know, it is a TV series and we have to think long game. So we want to see the show, you know, stand the test of time and go for more than two seasons. So, you know, there will be ups and downs, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Long game and end game.
Yeah. End game.
Yeah, well, and I think this is such a unique thing for Hallmark because Marissa and I talk all the time. We love Hallmark movies, but in 2 hours, like a one-time two-hour thing, you really just get to see the beginning stages of people falling in love, and then we don't get to see it play out in a relationship and the ups and downs that come with that. So I love that we get to see that with Trace and Abby, and not just the honeymoon phase of, oh, the high school sweethearts back together, but like, what would it look like for them to actually be in a relationship, and how does that play out? It's so fun to watch.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I learned a lot about love from watching romantic comedies, and I just thought, oh, they're together. It's happily ever after.
Same.
And then you realize, no, that's just when it begins. Like, now they're together, so now it begins. It's not the ending. So, and then there's a lot of life that happens, and that's what Chesapeake Shores allows us to do, is like give it breath and find out, okay, what does this look like in real life, you know?
I mean, absolutely. And you mentioned that maybe you want a two-hour episode because this is an ensemble show. I keep saying that we need a O'Brien Christmas movie.
Or Thanksgiving.
Or Thanksgiving or New Year's. Yeah. Just throw out any holiday to see this family together for a two-hour
special. I know. I want a very Chesapeake Christmas like we had a little hint of a Thanksgiving sort of, you know, what it was like for Thanksgiving dinner at the O'Brien house with the tuna fiasco. I don't know I hope everyone's caught up because that's a spoiler from like 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
No, like 3 weeks ago. then we would love that, you know. And then I saw somebody who wrote, were you talking about an Easter episode? Somebody was talking about an Easter episode, and I was like, oh, that sounds fun. I mean, any like a themed movie or something, we would all love that. I mean, it just depends on what the network, like what's going to work with the schedule and logistically, and you know, how long we have the crew and how long we can shoot for. There's just like so many factors that come into it. But yes, I think we're all on board if we could do something like that.
Oh, and we would so be on board watching it, because I feel like those are great opportunities to help bridge the gap from hiatus to, you know, the next pending season. And it gives us a taste of what this family is like during, you know, the holidays or, you know, during any special moment of the year.
Oh, I know. I mean, we say this, like there's certain sort of scenes that are like trademark kind of things for Chesapeake Shores, and scenes like the O'Brien breakfast family, like that's our way that we sort of end up starting every episode, because it just feels like real life. You know, there's a family and there's lots of people and everyone's rushing in and out. And you know, we haven't had too many dinner scenes. We've had a few.
But they're so special when they happen.
Yeah. It's like any time for me, like watching Chesapeake Shores or any show that I love, when all my people get together and they're all working together and everyone's kind of like getting along and happy, or, you know, they're just together. It just feels so good, you know, like, and we love that. And like the scenes with the sisters together, that's another one. Like anytime we can kind of put the family in like a moment where they're like, you know, loving each other and connecting and reminiscing or whatever it is, it's just so, so sweet.
Yeah, I feel like we got a lot, you know, we get it every episode, but we got a lot of those special moments in this particular episode, I think, really right at the beginning when everyone's on the floor ready to surprise for the birthday. And I just love that small little banter. They're all on the floor whispering to each other. It really felt like a brother-sister family moment, you know?
I know. I think I said this on Twitter, sort of like a behind-the-scenes fun fact. I like to do fun facts on Twitter as I'm watching, and I'm like, oh, yes, I remember something. That little scene was written originally with everybody hiding under the kitchen table. But the way that the kitchen table is built, there's big legs and things, so it really wasn't – it just wasn't going to work. And so our director, Andy Makita, who's great, and we loved him, he was like, went and did the scout because he hadn't, you know, been to the locations yet. And he was like, he took pictures and he showed us. He's like, you know, if they hire on the table, Carrie's going to walk in and she's just going to see them all standing there. So there's going to be like no surprise. So he's like, what if we put them behind the island? And Michael and I were like, yeah, it's like a no brain. You know, we didn't even think of it. But it's things like that that make it very collaborative, right? And behind the island is so perfect because they all like line up together. And then when she walks in, she literally can't see them. So it worked out really, really great.
Well, at the very beginning of the episode, when we didn't yet know it was Carrie's birthday, right? I just thought that they were maybe reliving something they had done as kids, because even as adults, they fit so nicely under the island that I was like, this is the cutest little spot for them to talk before breakfast officially begins. So I actually thought, before we knew the whole surprise thing, that that could have been something that they did as kids, because they seemed to fit so nicely and it was a perfect place for a little private chat.
I love that. And I'm sure they did. Like, that just, you know, there's a lot of them there. You know, there's not a lot of places where a lot of them could hide. So that was probably where they did hide when they were younger.
Right. And a lot of great bonding moments, too, especially near the end when we had Abby and Kevin in the bedroom and they're eating ice cream, giggling. Oh, my gosh. That was so funny. I was laughing out loud.
I know. It was so cute. And it was a lot of it was them playing off each other, too. Like, you know, I mean, it's scripted, but they're both so good. Like, they're so good together. But and Brendan is so funny. And so that's just, you know, it was very natural. And his giggle, like, it was hysterical.
It was hysterical.
Well, and I think it was so, my thought about that particular scene is it was so characteristic of Kevin to show up and like he's processing a major life decision, which of course is he wants to be a paramedic and he's not going to be a doctor and all of that. And he, in a way, he's showing up as if he's doing it for himself and he needs to talk and whatever. Mm-hmm. But really, he's also there to support Abby. And I think that's what we always see from Kevin is like he is the supporter and he is supposed to be the rock for all the other siblings. So even when he's going through something, which he definitely has been in the last couple episodes, he still shows up as a rock for all of them. And I, you know, I think that's one thing we love about Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah, I love that moment where she's like, that's why you're really here, isn't it? Like, he just knows. He's just like, you know, you think Abby's like the big sister, and she is, but then Kevin's just sort of like the one who's just like, he just knows what's going on, and he's always just there, you know, as best he can be, like when he was giving Jess advice a few episodes ago, which I loved seeing the two of them together, because we don't really have any scenes of the two of them, and that was when we're like, oh, yeah, look at them. And it was great. He was trying to give love advice and, you know, she came up with her own solution, but he's always there. He's just kind of, he's the rock.
He is the rock. And Chris in the live chat actually asked a really good question. You mentioned that they were playing off of each other, you know, during the acting moments. Do the actors ever really go off script, like ad lib or, you know, or were there any moments where that may have happened? Are you like, or are you really strict to your script?
Well, it sort of depends. I mean, we are in a sense, cause we have like, you know, how many minutes in an episode. So we have to, there's certain information that needs to be like gotten across within each scene. So there's certain elements where we need to stick as close to the script as we can, but people sort of play within that with their characters sometimes, like depending there's some, actors who are like word for word. And others who like just change a couple words, and others who kind of interpret it in their own way, which is kind of the beauty of like them all. You know, we give them the words, but the actors make their characters, right? And there are moments that are ad lib, like some of the little jokes and little banters and things. Some of it's scripted, and then they add to it. And like Treat Williams is genius for that. Like he is genius for that. And some of it we can keep in and sometimes we can't because it just, you know, doesn't end up working or for whatever reason. But like, there are some like hilarious lines that he just adds in he's smart about it too. But like, he always has like a button out. Do you remember that episode? I don't remember which one it was because it's like, there's so many of the ones where Thomas and Mick are walking through the trust land. Mm-hmm. And then Mick goes, this is going to be a long walk.
Yes,
do you remember that line?
I do.
When him and Thomas are like arguing and then we're kind of like, I think it's like a high angle shot. And then they're like, well, this is going to be a long walk. I mean, that line was Treat Williams. those are like some of his little moments and gems, you know? So that wasn't scripted, but it made it into the cut of the episode because it was so funny.
Nice.
I have a question for you, specifically from the perspective of a writer and connected to Bree being a writer. If you were seeing a guy at some point in your life and he like submitted something you wrote without your permission, how would that go over with you? And do you think Bree is justified in being a little not so thrilled with Simon right now?
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Because in some ways it's so sweet and thoughtful, right?
What's that?
In some ways it's so sweet and thoughtful of a gesture.
I know, and it's like her career and it's a huge opportunity. I mean, he submitted it and it was like something awful, it was like to like the National Enquirer, or, you know what I mean? Like something that was like, you know, that would be awful, but it's like an opportunity. This is her first chance to be a published author, and this is a book she's been working on for a really long time, and you know, so, and he has those connections. So, I mean, it's hard, but I also know Bree's backstory and her, you know, we make a little fun joke that she dated Voldemort for 7 years. So she's got a little bit of, you know, she's a little timid.
No,
and not so trusting. So,
right.
Yeah. I completely believe that because I love the fact that, I mean, she unfortunately dated, Oh my gosh, I'm completely Martin. I was like, he's not important that I already forgot his name. Martin, who like so did not believe in Brie and changed her voice completely, which changed her writing by extension. And then literally the next guy that Brie meets is someone who really truly believes in her writing and her talent and her personal voice. I just love that immediate contrast between these two guys and just like the difference of someone believing in your actual work and can help further your career. Yeah, she's going to be in a happy place because I think she might have been upset in the moment that Simon did it, you know, without her knowledge. But yeah. She overall, I think she's happy about it.
Well, I mean, this is a huge opportunity for her, you know, and I mean, I know as a writer, like when you find someone who like really gets you and gets your writing and they understand, you know, like they understand you in that way because it's such a personal thing as a writer. You know, it's like, I love that quote. I think it's Ernest Hemingway. Like being a writer is simple. All you do is sit at a monitor or computer or whatever and bleed. And it like literally is that, right? Like right. You're just pouring out like, and it's a challenge. And so to find somebody who like, he's read her most personal stories, you know, and he like, things that she wrote in sixth grade, like, and he's like, you're a great writer. You know, I mean, Simon's a pretty special guy.
I think she'll get over it. Ironically, the live chat thinks this could be a breakup moment for Simon and Brie, which would devastate me if that's how the season ended, because I love this relationship. I don't think so. No, I'm sorry, Chessies. I'm going to have to disagree with you, Chris, and anyone else saying that, because I think that she will find a way to forgive this.
Well, we will see what unfolds. There's a lot of story to tell in episode 10 because we've been building up so much over the course of the season. It's like, we had to cut so much out of the episode, like all this great stuff, because we just didn't have the room for it.
Ooh, so, like anything that you could share that we may not know?
Well, it's hard to, I don't think I can say it about episode 10 yet because it won't be in context, you know, and then it might give some spoilers, so I don't want to do that.
Fair.
And it'd be accidental, and then I'll be like, ooh, that's too much information. But, like, we have to do that in every episode. Every episode, there's always, like, one or two scenes that have to go, and it's, like, it's very sad. Because you're like, what do you cut? Because we wrote them for a reason. Like, they're all good, right? So, or, you know, but there's just things where you go, okay, well, if we take this out, we won't maybe miss it. We won't know that it's gone. For example, in 2009, in the Royal Court, we cut a family dinner scene.
Ooh.
You remember how Connor says to Trace, I better get home, Jess is cooking dinner.
Yes.
And so we had a great scene where Jess is supposed to be cooking dinner, but David's there and David's cooking dinner and it's wonderful. And they're just, you know, talking about work and everything else. Connor comes in but Nell isn't there. And then she shows up at the end because she was out having dinner with Thomas, and she shows up at the end and she's like, and David had made her her famous recipe. I think it was like a chicken cordon bleu or something. And then Nell was like, what is this? And then may I try a taste? And then she tries it and she's like, oh, this is the best I've ever tasted. And it was a really cute scene and we loved it. But like, yeah.
But it didn't progress the story forward.
Well, yeah. And so then you have to like make these decisions. I hope that, you know, I don't know if we ever have a DVD with like, you know, deleted scenes and stuff, but that would be great because there's those moments where you're like, oh, this is such a great performance, or this is such a cute moment, but then we can only have so much runtime and you always shoot more. You always do.
Absolutely. I think that should be in the DVD specials. Yes. You know, the deleted scenes special, you know, segments, and then also Jordan's also saying in the live chat.
Outtakes.
Everyone loves outtakes.
The outtakes. We at our wrap party, they showed us some of the outtakes. They played it on the big screen, and you know, it's like, it's great, so great. Oh, you know, everyone's like, oh, laughing, crying at the same time because they're like, it's over.
Seems like such a fun cast to do outtakes with, does it not? I want to see the outtakes.
Oh yeah, they're always like someone's coming up behind someone's shoulder, and you see like Treat like pop in, and you know, or like. They're like talking to the camera, or then they flub up and they're like, you know, it's great. I hope they should. Did they not do that for season one? We gotta find out about this, because it would be great to have it for you guys to see.
Yeah, we would definitely love it in season two. That's for sure. I want to talk a little bit about the trust in Mick and Thomas storyline. This has been a long storyline that's been going on, I feel like, this whole season. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in this episode, they're finally starting to be more civil towards each other. They're starting to try to do a compromise. Is there going to be, like, a good, happy resolve at the end of all of this, I hope?
Oh, well, I don't know about happy. I can't give spoilers.
Okay, fair.
I will say that, you know, there's some conversations that need to be had, because Connor now works with his Uncle Thomas, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a spoiler. I don't want to say things that people are like, what? I haven't seen the episode.
Doing research for his uncle.
Yes. Well, he did some research and he says, where can I send my resume? Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll make sure. And so there is the aftermath of that. That I will say. And I will also say that that is a storyline that we knew from day one that we were building towards.
Okay. Very.
So that's one of the things that we stuck with from the beginning. We all talked about. We're like, season two is like the humbling of Connor O'Brien, you know, like last season, he was like, I'm going to beat the DOJ at the mini golf. And now like, he's just like, he, you know, has no real life experience as a lawyer, but he's just like, you know,
so confident.
Got a little too big for his britches. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to see him go through a journey this year. And I think he really does. Like he, you know, like when he was working at that place where there are drones for a while, and he had to really figure out, who am I, and is this what I want, and who am I pleasing, and who am I doing this for? Am I doing it for myself? And what is really important? Is it having a fast car or a Porsche or whatever it is that he wanted, or is it, you know, is there something more to this? And Danielle has really helped him, and his Uncle Thomas, and I think he's starting to see that there's more to life than, you know, than, and especially like being a drone, like. The character of Vince Coates that retired, you know, like Connor in 40 years from now, kind of a thing, you know, like the flash forward of, is this what I'm going to look like if I stay here?
Yeah.
Sorry, tangent.
No,
I think, honestly, Marissa, I think there's what episode 9 left me thinking is there's too much that still needs to happen, still needs to be figured out, still needs to be adjusted with Mick and Thomas and this deal. I'll make a prediction about it later, but I don't think we're gonna have it completely all done and wrapped up in a bow in one episode.
Yeah, and we only have one episode left. I can't believe it.
I know, we're already at the finale.
Finale's next week.
I know, it's crazy. And I mean, that's why we only have so many scenes that we can discuss that storyline next week, right? So mm-hmm. I feel like let's get a season three, and then because there's things that we introduced at the end of episode 9 and that are going to change the trust a little bit. And that's also not a spoiler, because everyone remembers that Douglas Peterson came back, right?
Right.
And so
I was just actually mentally thinking, can I confirm that this is about Douglas? Because that's how I'm hearing what she's saying right now.
And a lot of people are pairing Doug and Abby together.
Talking in code, because I don't want to give too many spoilers, but I'm like, no, people watch the episode, so they know that Douglas
Right, this is an after show purposely to discuss the episode. Right. You should not be watching an after show if you have not watched the episode.
It. Turn it off, people, if you haven't seen the episode.
And then come back to us afterwards.
Yes.
Come back later.
Yeah. But yeah, and Douglas came back and he said he was very interested in overseeing this trust now if Matt Fox is out. What do you think is going to happen if he helps and he gets involved with this?
Was his line, I'm very interested? Was that the line?
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
I'm definitely interested.
I thought that was such a double speak. Like, he's so definitely interested in Abby. So obvious. Not even trying to hide it. I loved that line.
He said it twice. That's the thing.
Even Victor Webster, who plays Douglas, he was like talking to Michael about you know, his character and about those scenes, and he was like, so that line, hey, the, definitely interested. That means what I think it means, right? and Michael's like, oh yeah, yeah. Like, okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Like, it's definitely got, there's a little hint of Douglas. You know, whether Abby's interested is a whole other thing. But, you know, I mean, Abby's a catch, and Victor should be so lucky. Or, sorry, Douglas Peterson should be so lucky.
Right. Right. We follow you. Yeah, I agree, because a lot of people are already pairing Douglas and Abby together. And I'm like, no, Abby and Trace, come on. But, I mean, I can understand where maybe Douglas could give Trace a run for his money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, maybe. There is something about Douglas that is appealing, maybe not to Abby yet, but like us as the writers, and seeing Abby and like knowing her as a character, like who would be a natural fit? Well, Douglas, you know, he's a single father. Yeah, he has a kid the same age as Carrie. They know each other, their kids, and you know, he's in the same finance world. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of parallels between them where they're in the same place in their lives, right? But whether they're the right fit, that's another thing. We don't know that. We haven't, you know, we don't know that. That's nobody knows that yet. But I definitely like to see him being introduced, because if anything, it just helps Abby, you know, if we get a season three, you know, to like, to know what, how much Trace means to her, and, you know, like just to know what do you want as a woman, and what's important to you, and what, you know, that sort of thing in your relationships.
Well, that's how I perceived his role in the series from the beginning, is he just showed up to really demonstrate the contrast to Abby of, like, everything that Trace is not, which doesn't mean she should not be with Trace, just he represents, this is, like, how it would have played out if you dated a different person, you know? And I think when we're in questioning moments in relationships, that is what we see. Is like, oh, that one thing that's frustrating me about the person, this person over here doesn't have that issue. I will say the thing that stood out to me the most in this episode about Abby is, I feel like Abby is still not comfortable with the band and still kind of almost dreads them coming, or like has a little resentment. And that is the thing that concerns me most. I don't know how we were supposed to perceive that necessarily. I would love your thoughts on that. But to me, if Abby puts Trace in like a competition of the band versus her, which is how she seems to view it right now, I feel like that's a really bad thing for their long-term success, everybody working together.
Well, yeah, I think Abby's come a long way with the band. You know, I mean, remember last season with her and Lee, you know, there was definitely some jealousy and things like that. And I think she's come a long way. She sees that Trace is completely devoted and committed to her. And he, you know, he loves his band, but he loves her, and there's not, you know, there's not an issue there. But I do still feel that with Abby, that there's still the something, like, you know, he's got a band, and bands, they play shows, like they tour, they, you know, like, and like he's got fans, you know, like it would be challenging when she's, you know, got to be there to, you know, tuck her kids in at night. And there was one episode when Carrie and Caitlin were sick and she had to rush home and she couldn't be there when he was performing. Yeah. You know, that's the reality of Abby's life, and that's not the reality of his life. So I think there's still a part of her that's like almost like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, okay, is this too good to be true? He says he promised he's going to be here, but will he? And you know, like she doesn't want to interfere with his life too, you know? So it's tricky. I mean, I would be tricky if I was in Abby's shoes, I think, but she loves him, and I think she's come a long way. Like, I think she's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's really clear that she loves him and he
I'll
loves
stop.
Her. yeah, you're more than welcome. Oh. But
are you still there?
Yes. Yes, can you hear us? Oh, experience some slight technical difficulties, guys. Just bear with us. But yes, it's very clear that Trace loves Abby and Abby loves Trace, because we even see in moments in this episode where Trace still actively goes out and picks up the girls, and like he's very part of their lives, and the girls are really bonding with him, singing and performing. How cute was that?
And well, then, he's really showing up for the kids. And yeah. Also, is there some part of Trace, I had to ask you this, is there some part of Trace that's resisting the labels, not because he's really afraid that they're going to screw him over again, but just because he wants to stay in Chesapeake Shores and not let that disrupt it?
I think Trace knows that he's got a good thing in Abby, and he loves the girls, and it's like, you know, this is a chance for him to have that sort of stability that he hasn't really had, and I think it's definitely a question in his mind and something he's, you know, thinking about and concerned about, because he doesn't want to lose Abby. Like, Trace is like, it's weird because he's such a good guy. Like, he's so loyal and he's so, like, such a stand-up guy. And you think, wow, somebody that, like, you know, like a rock star kind of guy, and he's, like, so attractive and all these things. You're like, God, where's his fault? But, like, Trace is, he doesn't really, he's just, like, a stand-up guy. Like, and, you know, he's very loyal and he always wants to do the right thing. Like how he was paying for John Rawls' recovery during the hospital bills, you know, like, and he didn't have all the money to do that. He gave up all his savings for that. And, you know, willing to do whatever it takes, like walk away from a record deal because he didn't want to lose Lee. Like, you know, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I just think a trace of maybe even a few, and I'm glad that you guys also maybe picked up on this or see this now, but I think a trace of a few episodes ago would have jumped on one of those label deals. Like some, you know, with a little less hesitancy. I just think I'm seeing a more mature trace of, you know, I really am fitting into this family and we really have found a groove with our life. And I think that's a little bit of his hesitancy, not just the problems with Mark Hall.
Yeah, and that was another thing that we had talked about early in the season, and what we wanted to see was to see Trace, not that he wasn't grown up, but to, like, he had healing to do, right? I mean, you saw how hurt and how much guilt he was carrying in season one, and he had a lot of stuff that he had to heal and work through, and because he was able to go through that and heal with stuff with the band and John Rawl and stuff with his father, you know, there was a lot of growth that happened to Trace this season. I mean, we saw him, I mean, you'll see some really, really sweet moments with him and the girls in the finale. And like, he's just, I don't know, he surprised me. Like, I don't think I saw him as the, like, you think, oh no, he's a rock star, he's not gonna wanna be the guy with it. But like, and Jesse was like, no, put me in there. Like, let's have a handshake, let's do, you know, he was just like, he's so on board with it, and you feel that, like, Trace has become, he's become, like, a part of the family, it feels like.
Yeah, he is family, and I think that's what makes good drama, when you tear family apart, if that happens, you know? And it's not something that we want to see, because he's so attached to that family now, and the girls love him, Abby obviously loves him, the family loves him, and it's hard to see him always go off when he's trying to do something for himself too. And it's not being selfish, it's just, it's like we want to see him in Chesapeake Shores because that's where he belongs.
Yeah, it would be a challenge, like anybody like in his position, I think, if you know, like, it's like, I want it, but can I have both? How do you do both? Like, you know, it's a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, people in live chat are saying that Trace should go solo and he should dump Lee and John.
What?
That's
Trace run the band.
People are saying.
Yeah.
But he stuck by the band, and that's what led to the success of this 800,000 video.
He's so loyal to the band. That's
That's the thing. I mean, he did, he walked away from like the chance of that, and then it turned out to be in his favor because, you know, they're good together, the band. Like, there's just there's a real nice balance to them. I mean, he's still, Trace to me, it feels like a rock star, but I love Lee there and John Rawl. Like, I think it's just, it's nice, you got your people with you, right? Even if he was a solo guy, he's still gonna need his band, right? So this way he's like, I'm sharing this with everyone, but it's still his name, so it's like, you know, it's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about the best of both worlds, you get the writing aspect, but then also you get to be on the set every once in a while. Does that like really being there on the set physically with the cast and seeing everything, play out right in front of you, does that help for your writing process and the storylines?
Oh, I mean, 100%. Yeah. I remember even like in season one, I was on set and one of my first conversations with Diane Ladd, she was so awesome. She's like, "Oh, I'm a writer too." And she's like, "I got some great ideas." I'm like, "All right, let's talk, Diane." And she's like, "We need to have a fairy garden." And I'm like, "I love it. I love fairy gardens." And she's like, "We need da da da." And I was like, "Perfect, let's do it." And we just start, chatting about things, and that ended up being in the episode that I wrote. I put in a fairy garden. So
Yeah.
that happens. That's one example. And just another is, you're there for the conversations and to see things. And when the director or cast or crew come up to you and go, "Oh, wait a second, is this what you guys meant to, is this what this is?" Or, people have questions and there's someone there to like kind of talk it through. And a lot of times they have a better solution than us, but like we're there if they, need to figure things out or change things, because things change on the fly all the time. But it's so fun to watch. Like I love the like honestly, my favorite place in the world is like on set. It's like it's magic every time. Like it's just, you're like, "Roll sound," and you're like, "Oh my God." It's
It's
just it's the
happening.
greatest. It's just, you're it's like, "Give me the popcorn." You're like watching a movie, like, but it's like being made, so there's like it's so fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I love production and the set life as well. It's so great to see your hard work being actually, put in into fruition, so to
Yeah.
speak.
Yeah, that's something about film, is that you really, you come up with an idea or a concept, and then you have to write it, and then you have to like, implement it as far as like getting it, put it all together. But then you have a finished product at the end of it, and you watch it, and you're like, "Wow, it all came together. It all seemed to work out." Like there's times when you're editing, even episode 9, where there was so, it was too long, and we're like, "Oh no, what are we gonna do?" And then you find a way to like trim where you need to here and there, and it turned into like one of our favorite episodes. So it's like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's very neat. Now we know that the show is based. I mean, it started off of Sheryl Wood's, book series, and we know that this show has taken a lot of creative license and creative liberties in executing like the story for television. But are you like really familiar with those stories, or the actual books, and or have you read any of them, or is there any elements from those stories that you would really like to see play out in the show?
Yes, well, like some of the earlier storylines I'm more familiar with than some of the later books, because we had to take some liberties, like things that happened before I even got on board in season one, because I wasn't there for the pilot, and so some character changes were made and things like that, and there's things that we had to adapt and change. I mean, there's certain characters that we haven't got to introduce. I mean, bringing in Thomas this year was really important, like, because I was like, and he has another brother too, so it's like, but we haven't really talked about him and introduced him in the season yet, and I'd still like to bring him in, but they're like, "Well, I think it might be too hard now." And so there's certain, and even Trace, we had talked about him having a sister, and that changed. Oh yeah, so many things. But yeah, there's certain like we had to change Brie. We gave her a bookstore instead of a flower shop. So there's things that end up adapting and changing. But I think that's also part of the process with the TV series too, because like with the books, there's a lot that gets told in one book, right? And we have to draw out, and throughout a whole season kind of thing. So, and her, the way the books go too, they're focused on different characters. They're almost like an episode on their own, but we want to like sustain these over a long period of time. So, you may see some things from the books, but we've tried to take the world and kind of like, there's been liberties, but Cheryl has been so awesome. And she came up to visit us on set, and she was there for like episodes 3 and 4 for a few days, and was there for the table read, which is awesome, reading the scripts with her like right there. And she watches all the cuts, and she's so collaborative, and she understands like it's the way TV works. Like there's certain things that we needed to change and adapt for certain reasons. But we love the books. And I mean, the books have Christmas episodes and things like that. So yeah, maybe there will be something that we take from them coming up.
Exciting.
Exciting things. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, you added so much insight and more things that I think a lot of people didn't know. So thank you for that.
Great. Oh, thanks. Yeah. I feel like we didn't get to hear like what you guys thought of the episode, and now look at the time. I talked a lot. So,
oh, no, it's great. You know. We love the episode.
And we love this season. Thank you for being a part of this show.
Oh, my God. Thank you guys for doing this after show. I just like love that you do this, because I used to be a watch a show called The Hills like many thousands of years ago, and they had an after show, and I think it was maybe one of the first times that people did that. And I watched the after show religiously because it was like, this is my show. I want to talk about it. And so I love that you guys are doing it. And I've seen the last few episodes because I was sort of late to the party, and I love what you guys do. Like it's super fun, the two of you, and you're breaking it down, and it's just great. It's so cool that people want to talk about these characters and like they care about the show. You know, it just makes us feel so good that what we're doing means something. And we love like all our fans and the Chessies and you know, interacting with you guys and stuff. And so thanks for having this platform.
Oh yeah. Thank you for giving us such a great show to talk about.
Yay.
For 10 weeks straight and, you know, all the seasons to come, just saying.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Let's hope. I really hope so.
Throwing that out there. Is there any upcoming projects that, you know, Chessies and Hallmark fans can look forward to in your work?
Yeah, there's a couple things happening. It's a bit busy right now. I'm doing a rewrite. I've got an all-nighter ahead of me for a Hallmark rom-com that hopefully is going to start shooting in the next couple weeks. So so that's coming up, hopefully, fingers crossed. And then there's I'm directing a short film for Lifetime. It's a family Christmas movie, and I direct that next week. So we're prepping that right now. So it's a little insane. And so I'm not sure. I think it's going to air before Christmas, so that's not Hallmark. But and then there's another rom-com. I think that's going to be Hallmark, and that I'm starting writing after I finish this rewrite. So there's a few things in the fire, and then hopefully we'll be starting on season 3, you know, in the next couple months.
Yes.
So there's a lot. Once I can say more, I will, and I'll announce on Twitter and Instagram and stuff so that people can tune in, because they're all really good stories. Like, I'm excited to share them. So
yeah, speaking of Twitter and Instagram and all those fun social media platforms, where can everyone keep following you and your amazing work, you busy woman?
I don't even know what my Instagram is Kierstagram, which is KEARSTEN. Oh, no, Kierstagram, GRAM. I don't know. I'm saying off the top of my head. And then my Twitter is Kierstin, which is K, and then I think it's _EAR_STEN. And then Facebook, I've got, I sort of just keep it to my family, but I have a writer page on there, but it's not really that exciting. That's like the Kirsten Sonja Hansen page. But it's Twitter, Instagram. That's where I'm actually more active than anything else. People can find me, and I love interacting when I can with you guys. It's been awesome.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Kirsten, for joining us. You added so much insight. We love it. And we love the show, obviously, and your amazing work. So congratulations.
And can't wait for the finale. We will talk about it, of course.
I want to hear your predictions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can get to predictions, but
you're over time, but I want to hear them.
Okay. Stefan, real quick.
We'll go fast.
Predictions. Yes, real quick.
My predictions are that Abby and Trace will break up, though I don't know it will be because of the scene that they may have misled us with on the credits, but we will see. I predict that they will break up in advance of Trace taking a deal, but I predict that he will go back to Mark Hall and make a deal with Mark. I always get them confused. It is Hall, right? Mark Hall.
John Rawl, Mark Hall.
Yes.
John Rawl, Mark Hall, yeah.
Okay. I think we are going to get David's backstory. I don't think it's going to be anything super scandalous. My guess is politics. Some explanation for there being a wealthy family.
$10,000, I mean, you can't just drop $10,000.
But I predict Jess will think that they got to step 10, and then she'll realize they have to let the relationship play out and be present. So that's my prediction with them. And then I do predict, this is my final one, I do predict that Connor will go to work for Thomas, and I predict that this is, instead of ending the season with Mick, being his usual I'm in control self, Thomas is going to lord it over Mick that he, because Thomas is finding out the deal is not actually going well. Mm-hmm. And so I predict Thomas is going to find out that Matt pulled out of the deal. And now Thomas has Connor working for him. And I think Mick will not be very pleased in episode 10. So those are my predictions.
Yep.
Great predictions. You should join the writing room.
I know. And I think, like I've been predicting since episode 1, that I still think Trace and Abby are going to, unfortunately, break up. It might also be during just, I think Abby's the one that's going to initiate it, which is going to be really sad and heartbreaking for everybody. I don't want it to happen, but I think it might happen. Thomas will hire Connor for the position. I think that's actually really going to happen. So Connor now has a job. Yay. And then also, I think Sarah's going to come back to Kevin because I called it last episode too. I still think that she's going to come around because seriously, Kevin as a paramedic and her as a firefighter woman, oh my God. That, like, the relationship is just like so compatible. It has to happen.
I think it could happen. I just care about Simon more, and I need Bree and Simon to end the season together.
Yeah. And then Bree's going to obviously get published. It's going to be great.
Yes.
You guys have really good predictions, and some of them are like, whoa, good, and bang on, sort of not quite, but kind of close. And some of them are like, so I don't want to say which ones are which.
That's okay. The best, though. That's it's a good mixed bag, and we have to watch the finale next Sunday at 9/8 Central
that's
to find out.
Exactly why we call it predictions, because we don't know.
You guys are great. Like, it's so cool to hear, too, where people think they're going, you know, the characters are going. And it's like, okay, then if we've done our job right, or maybe we haven't, or, you know. Like,
no,
hopefully
it's good that we can't just 100% say, wow, they laid it out for us. This is what it's going to be. I love that it's a mystery and because that's how life is. We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much, Kirsten, for joining
us. Thank you, guys. I mean, I wish I could have seen your lovely faces, but it's really been so fun talking with you. And I wish I could, you know, usually you guys talk a lot more. I think I talked a little too much. So.
Oh, no. But, you were perfect.
I really, really had a lot of fun, so it was good to chat with you.
Oh, great. Well, we'll let you go, and you get busy to your writing, and we look forward to seeing everything else you do in the future. Hopefully back for season 3. I'm throwing that out there for everybody. We'll see more of your amazing work.
Yes, thank you. And yeah, so hopefully we can do this again maybe in season 3. So let's all put the good vibes out there. And
absolutely. We'll have you back for season 3. How about that?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Oh, great. So much great things. I loved, loved, loved it. I mean, this is such a great episode. We got to get it out of here. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Kirsten. I mean, she had amazing things to say. Where can everyone keep following you, Stefan?
Yes, Dr. Lovegrove on Twitter and Instagram. Come say hi, and we will live tweet the finale.
There you go. And you can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. You can follow all of us here, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms at AfterBuzzTV. We only have one more episode left. It's the finale, you guys. It's already here, and we'll see if our predictions come true. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you for the finale.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.